fire on the earth. Our Holy Father has said the church is missionary by her very nature. The church exists to evangelize. He's called for a new springtime of evangelization. To help us obtain the tools each of us needs to answer the church's call, this is Fire on the Earth. Here is our host, Peter Herbeck.
Good morning, friends, and welcome to Fire on the Earth. This is Peter Herbeck, your host. And this week, I've been really reflecting on the amazing story from the Gospel of Matthew and Luke, the temptation of Jesus in the desert. The temptation has a lot to teach us about the world we live in, a lot to teach us about the enemy and his goals, to teach us in Jesus and seeing in Jesus, what does it mean to be a human being? How are we called to live? And what are we facing in terms of temptation? And how do you defeat the tactics of the devil? Remember St. Peter said in his first letter, chapter 5, he said, "Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour." Peter knew that firsthand. He experienced it in his life in so many ways. And then he said, "Resist the devil, and he will flee from you." Christian people have always understood, as Jesus himself taught and lived, that life on earth is a spiritual combat. This is not our home. We're in enemy-occupied territory. We're living in a spiritual battle. This is why, friends, we lay our head down on the pillow at night, often with a sense of anxiety, sometimes a sense of fear, and people just reflecting on the things we saw and heard and experienced in the day. Seeing the condition of the country, seeing the condition of the world, worrying about our finances, worrying about our health, worrying about our cities, our inner cities, worrying about all the problems and the maladies which plague the culture, and then to worrying about our marriages and our children and our grandchildren. We know, despite how much we try to make it something more than it is, this is not our home, and we will never find comfort here from the world, ultimately. It'll have its moments, for sure. But the only way we will be secure and at peace is to live our identity, to really lay hold of the truth that we are sons and daughters of God, those baptized into Christ. There is a way out of this. We aren't meant to live here forever, and it's crazy to want to live here forever. I mean, it's natural on a certain level, but ultimately, this will not satisfy. No matter how long we end up being able to live in this world, how many pills will keep us alive longer, how much technology and nanotechnology in our brains and our bodies and whatever else is there, no matter what gets inserted into our bodies, and no matter how many more years we can extend things, we can't fix the fundamental problem that's here. And the enemy would love to assist us in doing all those things so he can fill us with the lie that we can immortalize ourselves. We've seen here in the story of the temptation of Jesus in the desert. Yesterday we were reading from Luke's Gospel, chapter 4, the account, the second temptation, where the devil takes Jesus up to a high place and shows him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time and said, "Look, I have authority over all this. I have all authority over it. All this glory that you see, it's in my hands, and I can give it to whomever I want to." So he's tempting Jesus at a high level. He's telling him, "Look, I will make you the king of all this. Everybody will think you're the best there is. You'll be on top of the world, literally. It's yours." Now, Jesus knows who he is. He's Son of God. He's Messiah. He's sent to die. He hasn't come to be the ruler of this world. He hasn't come to fix the world so he can be the ruler of this world. He's come to destroy his enemy. First John said, chapter 3, I think it's verse 8, "The reason the Son of Man came into the world was to destroy the works of the devil." That's what he's called to do. And to do it not by calling down his armies, but by dying on a cross and shedding his blood, becoming a sacrifice for our sin, and finally a human heart offered to the Father that has not turned from him, that has obeyed him, and fulfilled his destiny as a child of God. So the devil says, "Look, you can have all the gold, the glitz, the power, everything you want. One condition: worship me." That's where we ended yesterday. And friends, we are worship creatures. We're made by God for God. And he's put within us, we have within us a hunger for the transcendent, for God himself. And nothing will satisfy us. And as creatures, we're called and we're made to acknowledge God in his greatness. Give thanks. And a heart that's free of ego and pride and lust and anger and bitterness and all that, when the heart gets freed up by the Spirit, we begin to freely cry out, God, you are so good. I love you, God. I love you, Father. Your plan is good. You are good. You are great. There's none like you. And all the other silly, stupid idols that we have are thrown to the side. But there's a great battle for that. Every day, the same temptation is being served up for us to worship something else other than God. That's idolatry. It's a violation of God's commandment. It's a profound disordering of who we are. I came across this story the other day. A young guy, Joey McCoy, who's occasionally on the program, had come across this story from a talk he had heard. And I want to read some of it. What I'm going to read is an excerpt from a commencement speech given at Kenyon College. I think it's in Ohio, a liberal arts college, kind of known for its being strong, left-leaning kind of liberal place. And the commencement speaker is a writer, a famous kind of avant-garde postmodern writer. His name is David Foster Wallace. David, shortly after this commencement speech, I guess, is when he actually took his life as a young man. I think he was in his early 40s. He was a brilliant guy, very, very gifted. Not a believer, as far as I know, but he saw things and he understood some things about reality that is really worth listening to. Here's what he told these graduates. He said, because here's something else that's weird, but it's true. In the day-to-day trenches of adult life, there's actually no such thing as atheism. There's no such thing as not worshiping. Everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship. And the compelling reason for maybe choosing some sort of God or spiritual type thing to worship, JC or Allah, be it Yahweh or the Wiccan Mother Goddess or the Four Noble Truths or some inviolable set of ethical principles, is that pretty much anything else you worship will eat you alive. So he's a postmodern relativist, it looks like, at some level. And he's kind of saying humanity sort of chooses gods or something more transcendent because that will lead you in the right direction in some way. But every other idol that we choose, whatever else we worship, is absolutely going to kill us. It's going to wreck our hearts. He goes on to explain. He said, if you worship money and things, if they are where you tap real meaning in life, then you will never have enough. You will never feel you have enough. It's the truth. Worship your body and beauty and sexual allure, and you will always feel ugly. And when time and age start showing, you will die a million deaths before they finally grieve you. On one level, we all know this stuff already. It's been codified as myths, proverbs, cliches, epigrams, parables, the skeleton of every great story. The whole trick is keeping the truth up front in daily consciousness. If you worship power, you will end up feeling weak and afraid, and you will need ever more power over others to numb you to your own fear. Worship your intellect, being seen as smart. You'll end up feeling stupid, a fraud, always on the verge of being found out. But the insidious thing about all these forms of worship is not that they're evil or sinful. I would take a different view of that, but he goes on. It's that they're unconscious. They are our default settings. They're the kind of worship you just gradually slip into day after day, getting more and more selective about what you see and how you measure value without ever being fully aware that that's what you're actually doing. And the so-called real world will not discourage you from operating on your default settings, because the so-called real world of men and money and power hums merrily along in a pool of fear and anger and frustration and craving and worship of self. Our own present culture has harnessed these forces in ways that have yielded extraordinary wealth and comfort and personal freedom. The freedom all to be lords of our tiny skull-sized kingdoms, alone at the center of all creation. This kind of freedom has much to recommend it. But of course, there are all different kinds of freedom. And the kind that is most precious, you will not hear much talk about in the great outside world of wanting and achieving. The really important kind of freedom involves attention and awareness and discipline and being able to truly care about other people and to sacrifice for them over and over in myriad and petty, unsexy ways every day. In some ways, here's a guy who's not far from the kingdom of God. I mean, I'm not making a judgment on him at all. Only God knows the human heart and the destiny of every single person. I hope he found God in those last moments. But there was something really authentic happening in this man's heart. And he was reading what really matters. And he has to have help from God to get there, you know, to see and to unmask in such a clear way the lies of the culture. Really, to a graduating class and probably a faculty where maybe the majority of the people there don't believe in God. There's a kind of deep secularity there. But he's put his finger on something. There are no atheists. Here's a guy everybody probably would assume was an atheist. But there's no atheist. Everybody worships something. The question is, am I going to worship God or am I going to worship idols? Romans 1, which we've talked about many times on this program, is a famous passage where Paul talks about the wickedness of men coming under the judgment of God and the fundamental wickedness, he said, that's the term he uses, that God has come to judge is the suppression of the truth about God. God can be known through nature. God can be known even the human conscience and moving us toward what's good and true. Do good, avoid evil, that voice that God has put in us. And of course, the revelation of his son, Jesus, his revelation through the people of Israel. What can be known about God, Paul says, is plain. But humanity, human beings, are sorely tempted, constantly tempted to suppress the truth about God, to refuse to acknowledge him as God and give him thanks. It comes from the enemy, the tempter, the one who Jesus went face to face with in the desert, who said, look, I will give you everything if you worship me. Worship me. Friends, that temptation at some levels in every human heart, to doubt God, to not trust God, finally to suppress the truth about God. And in this broken, fallen world where we have to face our weaknesses and the realities of everyday life, in a fallen world, we are really tempted to go for the gold. We're tempted to just radically pursue power and money, position, influence. I want to be in the lights. And sometimes, friends, in our narcissism and weakness, that same temptation is worship me. I want everybody to see me. Friends, we receive our identity from God, and the only thing that will ever satisfy us, the only gaze that will ever satisfy us, is the gaze of God the Father, who says, well done, good and faithful servant. Let's not be seduced. Let's resist the devil, and he will flee. God bless you, friends. Have a great day.
This has been Fire on the Earth. It's heard here Monday through Friday at this time. Our host has been Peter Herbeck, Vice President of Missions at Renewal Ministries. You can contact Peter or listen again to this program on the web at renewalministries.net. Fire on the Earth is brought to you by Ave Maria Radio.
Friends, in this year of mercy, I'd like to offer you my new booklet, St. Francis Used Words. St. Francis is really a model of mercy, and he communicated that mercy through both deeds and through words. And Pope Francis reminds us that each one of us is called to do the same. If you'd like a copy of this free booklet, call 1-800-282-4789. That's 1-800-282-4789.